Hello and welcome to the Communication Corner, broadcasted every Tuesday at 9 a.m. on WBCX 89.1 FM, the voice of Brunel, Brunel University, that is, and rebroadcasted on Thursdays at 6 a.m. And yes, some WBCX listeners do tune in that early. We're happy to say hello to our listeners, whichever day you tune in. I'm your regular weekly host of the Communication Corner, Dr. Bill Lampton. And I'm delighted to be reunited today with my program producer, Christina Rhodes, WBCX's general manager. Christina just returned from vacation. Christina, tell us a little bit about what you were doing while we were freezing here in North Georgia.
Happy New Year, Bill. Well, thanks for asking. It was a great trip, a wonderful vacation. Got to soak up a little bit of sunshine, and you know how I like that. I also got to do something really exciting. You may know that I've been working with a personal trainer for a little over a year, and
yes,
she's been training me to do some just, you know, daily living, improving my quality of life. And we've been training for me to kayak, and I've never done it before. And I actually had the opportunity to go kayaking on the ocean with my husband. So it was wonderful, a wonderful experience.
Well, I see your tan there, too, as evidence of the fun you had.
Yes.
Yeah. Great. Happy it was a wonderful trip, and terrific to be with you again. My guest today is someone that I've known and respected for several years, ever since she participated in my day-long seminar titled Business Writing That Works, when she held a leadership position with the Georgia Department of Labor. Her name is Linda Hensel, and I'm delighted that Linda and I have kept in touch and that she's here with us today. Like many of our guests in the Communication Corner, Linda Hensel is multi-talented. And today we're going to talk about one of her specialties, and that is the magnificent instrument we know as the human voice. To get us started, think about these questions for a minute. Have you ever lost your voice for a couple of days because of laryngitis or some other illness? Did you realize then how dependent you are on your ability to speak clearly, fluently, and intelligibly? Remember the joy you felt when you were in full voice again? Another question, do you realize that your voice is very much like the way we think of a snowflake? It's totally yours, unmatched by anyone else who talks. In fact, I like to think of the voice as your spoken signature. That's what really amazes us and amuses us about professional performers who can imitate famous voices. It really takes a high level of skill to sound like someone else and do that convincingly. Another question. Remember the shock you felt the first time you heard a recording of you speaking? Didn't the playback sound like another person, not resembling your image of your voice, not at all? Have you ever gotten accustomed to what you sound like to others, not just to yourself? Linda Hensel will walk us through some of the major questions we want answered about our voices. She, by the way, was a speech and communication major at Mercer University, also did some drama, and is well known as a voiceover artist. Once again, I'll repeat that the Communication Corner is fortunate to host Linda Hensel as our first guest of 2011. Linda, welcome to WBCX FM and to our program. We appreciate your making the drive from Atlanta and being here to share your knowledge with us today.
Good morning, Dr. Bill, and I'd like to thank you so much for the opportunity to be a guest on the show today.
Our privilege. Linda, to what extent do you think we judge other people by their voice and diction? And I guess we could turn that question around and say, to what extent do people judge us by our voice and diction?
To a great extent. Our voice is the first impression that someone has of you. And based on what they hear, they form an impression, whether it is perceived or real. And that perception, you've heard before that perception is reality.
Yes.
And so what the person perceives to be true, based on what they hear, in their mind that it's true. And so, of course, there are geographical issues with the voice. We've heard the Southern accent and the perceived notion of what people believe by having a Southern accent. Your New Yorker accents, and, you know, depending on where you're from, people definitely judge you based on your accent.
Well, and I grew up fairly close to New Orleans, mm-hmm. and New Orleans has a dialect all its own. And the United States, we're not, yes, we maybe have one predominant language, but that doesn't mean we have one really common way of speaking.
We don't. We really don't. And even from the speaking fast or speaking low, there are different perceptions. If you have a faster tone of speech, you're perceived as being more intelligent. The slower speech, you may be perceived as being less intelligent.
And energetic as well.
Absolutely.
Often when I'm doing some speech coaching, I will talk a good bit about a speaker's rate and the impact that it does have. I often ask a speech coaching client the question, how many speakers do you know who are classified as dynamic speakers who were very slow speakers? And I can think of a couple of exceptions. One, of course, would be Dr. Martin Luther King. That was fine with him, though, because the incredible emotion that he brought to speaking, you didn't care whether he spoke fast or slow. And another one, I think, would be Paul Harvey. But Paul Harvey had...
Page two.
Yes, yes. And he had his own distinctive style. Something fascinating that's still on this topic, Linda, I don't know if you've had an opportunity to read Paul Harvey's biography, which came out very shortly after his death. And there he tells that in his early days in radio, the station manager said to him, Paul, we're going to put you in sales. We're going to take you off the air. And Paul Harvey said, why? And he said, these pauses are driving people crazy. They think that the station has gone off the air. So he compromised. He said, the pauses are very important in what I do, but I will reduce them some. Well, getting back to what you're saying about the first impression, and we all know first impressions can be permanent.
That's
impressions.
Right.
Whether they're right or wrong, they can be permanent impressions. It would seem to me, Linda, that the advice that you give us today about vocal skills are especially timely, necessary, and valuable for people who are pursuing the job market.
Absolutely. Because your voice is going to be the entrance into your next profession. And even if you're looking at having voiceovers as a next career, there's a lot that can be learned in how to get into the market and things to do to be able to improve your voice.
Well, even getting to the interview, sometimes your voice is what will get you to the interview when you get past that gatekeeper,
that's right,
as we call it. This person sounds intelligent. This person sounds energetic. This person sounds well-informed. So that's quite critical.
Yes, it is. Even the energy that you bring to your voice, you can tell if you've had a bad day and you have low energy, it comes through in your voice. But if you're feeling upbeat and lively, that comes through in your voice as well.
That's why I say to me the voice is the spoken signature, and it is yours very uniquely. Many of us hear great voices that we admire. The voice could belong to an actor like George Clooney or Morgan Freeman or the cavernous tones of James Earl Jones.
My favorite.
Right. Or we could be listening to a perky broadcaster like Robin Mead, HLN in the mornings. Kieran Chetri, who I very much enjoy watching and listening to on American Morning. Do you have any particular favorites? You mentioned James Earl Jones.
You mentioned one of my favorites, mm-hmm. James Earl Jones. Everyone knows him, the memorable tagline of CNN, this is CNN.
Mm-hmm.
The voice of Darth Vader, just memorable and powerful. And of course, one of my favorites is Walter Cronkite as a broadcaster, and just his voice, how he can capture a crowd through the power of his voice. He's one of my all-time favorites.
Yes, I happened to have the privilege of hearing Walter Cronkite in person once when I was in graduate school at Ohio University. We initiated a college of communication. He was our keynote speaker. You can imagine how thrilled everyone in the communication department was, and in fact in the entire university, to have Walter Cronkite as our keynote speaker.
I had the privilege of meeting him at
a book signing.
I was in college, and he was appearing in a book signing at CNN. Came up from college. I may have skipped class that afternoon.
Well worth it.
Well worth it.
I'm a former prof, but I'll still say it was well worth it.
Yes.
Okay, we've got all these great voices. Now, the question I would bring in next is, sometimes we're tempted to imitate superb voices like the ones we've mentioned or lesser-known people whose voices we admire. What's your opinion, Linda, as a voice expert, about trying to pattern our speech, our voice, after somebody else?
There's nothing wrong with listening to other people and practicing. If you hear someone's voice and you hear something that you really like about that voice, that can help to shape and define your voice and who you become, who your voice becomes. So there's nothing wrong with being able to imitate certain patterns of people that you like, but you definitely want to be able to create your own brand for yourself.
In fact, I think we could learn from those, but not really copy them.
Exactly.
Yes.
You're learning and you're taking bits and pieces that you would want to use to be able to shape your own brand.
I can remember back in, I mentioned Dr. Martin Luther King, and once I thought I was going to have an opportunity to hear him speak in person. Unfortunately, it did not work out. But I remember very well when Dr. King was popular. There were many young ministers who decided they would copy his style. Mm-hmm. And it really didn't work, because there's only one Dr. Martin Luther King. There's only one Paul Harvey.
Yes.
There's only one Walter Cronkite.
That's right.
Anybody we can mention. But yes, we can learn from these. I suppose we could make a comparison that if you are aspiring to be a writer, you read great writers. You see how they do it. And in my case, being a very avid golf fan, I like to play with great golfers and see how they do it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't ever really copy them fully by any means, but I learn by doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, while we're on the topic of voices, in what way do you think our normal conversational voice relates to the voice that we would use, for example, like we're talking on the radio today, or if you were interviewed on television, if you were speaking to a group of 100 people or 500 people, is that a different voice? How closely related is our regular conversational voice to our presentation voice, we could call it?
They're similar in that in a regular conversational voice, you want it to come across as warm and friendly, if at all possible. When you're doing your presentation, you still want to have a professional element to it, but you want to make sure sometimes you have to project and vary the tone of your voice when you're doing a speech in front of a crowd. You want to make sure that if you have a large crowd, the projection is there, and you want to make sure that the energy level is there, because your crowd will feel off of how you are. And so your energy is so important when you're addressing a group as in a keynote presentation, and being able to make sure that the projection levels is there and that you are altering your voice so that you maintain your crowd. And it's very important as a keynote presenter to gauge your audience. You have to gauge your audience. So many times I'll see in presentations where people are not gauging their audience. You know if people are getting tired, if they're nodding off, you have to switch gears. You may need to tell a joke. You may need to do something different to get your audience back. And even when you are speaking one-on-one, you have that eye contact that you can feed off of and the body language. You may not have that in a group dynamic. You can't see and it may be dark if you're in an auditorium. You may not be able to see the body language.
The back row you can't see.
Exactly. So therefore, you just have to project and maintain your own body language and the image and the enthusiasm that you bring to your group.
One of the fortunate things is you talk about needing more energy then.
Yes.
Usually a crowd compels us to have more energy. I mean, it's an exciting event.
Right.
It's a challenging
yes.
event. And very few people, even seasoned speakers, very few would go into that situation with a ho-hum attitude because it's a wonderful opportunity. Think of it this way. If you're giving a one-hour presentation, there are 500 people there. You've got 500 hours that have been dedicated to you.
Yes.
You cannot minimalize that.
That's right.
The value of that is a great gift to you, and you must do something with that gift with a dynamic presentation. Speaking of dynamic presentations, our guest today is Linda Hensel. You're in tune with the Communication Corner. WBCX FM 89.1, the voice of Brunel. Great to have Linda with us as our voice advisor and expert today. You said something about varying the voice. Describe, Linda, what's meant by a monotone voice, and tell us how we can avoid that problem.
Yes, having the same tone, the same pitch throughout when you're speaking, it can come across as being boring, and if you are speaking before a crowd, it doesn't work. And there are many people that have monotone voices, but you can change it with work. And there are different skills that you can do to be able to improve. And there are different techniques that you can use that can help your voice to get out of that monotone, from speaking at a higher pitch to even varying to a lower pitch. There are different things that you can do.
Well, it's very much like if you went to I know you're a singer as well as a speaker and voice expert. And if you went before an audience and you just sang one note constantly, the audience would empty pretty quickly, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And with monotone, you want to be able to find where your natural speaking voice is. If you were to, as an activity or an exercise, if you were to hum a note, when you hum that note and then say your name, if you could say your name in the same note that you hum, that's your natural speaking voice.
Interesting. That's your natural level?
That would be your natural level of speaking. And so if you notice a difference between when you were humming and when you were actually saying the name, if it's different, then you'll know you are not speaking at that natural pace,
well,
level.
Getting back to the variation of our pitch so that we will not be monotone, you can think back to Paul Harvey's sign-off,
yes.
where he's had this very deep voice all the way through, and then it's, good day.
Yes. But it would draw the crowd in.
That's right.
It was different, it was unique, and it captured his audience.
Yeah, I heard, and I know this story, this interview is not about him, but I have to share that at the time of his death, there was a story written about a small cafe someplace. I can't remember where it was. A lunch cafe. And it said that every time that Paul Harvey would come on, the waiters would quit serving lunch because they wanted to hear that 10-minute broadcast.
Yes.
That was how captivating he was.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, earlier you said something about regional accents. Suppose one of our listeners has a very prominent regional accent. Does that limit their effectiveness?
It doesn't limit their effectiveness by any means. I would recommend a speech coach if they want to be able to work in multiple markets. You could be limited in the markets that you work in if you have a regional accent.
If you're going to be living and working and dealing only with people in South Alabama, and you're from South Alabama, you don't need to do much about that.
You wouldn't need to do much at all. But if you're going to do something in the West, you want to make sure that you have a voice coach that can work with you. There are different techniques, different activities that you can do with your voice to be able to minimize that accent.
I'm not sure if you noticed, Linda, there was an article in the Atlanta paper just maybe a week ago about speech coaches who are working people who have come to the United States from other nationalities. They began to recognize that their native way of speaking was, and their experience professionally was holding them back. And so they have been working with prominent speech coaches in sessions to try to get to what I suppose we'd call more standard American diction.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And for more opportunities, that's something that would be necessary. And the voice coach is what I would recommend, because there are multiple activities that you can do to really be able to make you conscious of how you're speaking.
Well, let's get back to something that I said when I was introducing the program, and that is, if Linda, you and I, we know that this is going to be put on my blog, this audio, and a write-up about you and your contact information, and the blog, by the way, the address for that is thecompletecommunicator.com. I'll mention that again before the program is done. If you and I were to listen back to this interview, we may have the impression, gosh, you know, I could say Linda sounded just like herself, but that didn't sound like me. And you might could say, well, Bill sounded like himself, but it didn't sound like me. Why is it that the other person sounds on a recording like they do in real life, and yet we don't get that feeling about ourselves? What's behind that?
The voice that you hear in your head is not the actual voice that the other person is hearing. And so when we all hear our voices back on the tape recorder, we don't like it. We don't like it at all. And so it's has a tendency to be muffled within your head. So therefore it comes out completely different than the way you're actually hearing it yourself.
Well, the way we hear our voice is through bone vibration, isn't it?
That's right.
It's internal. Mm-hmm. And yet, when we hear a recording of our voice, then we're hearing it like somebody else did with the vibrations through the air.
Yes.
So that's the primary difference.
That's the difference. And we're not always pleased with it. But again, it can show you areas where you can improve. It can show you those areas in your voice where you need improvement.
All right. That brings me very logically a good segue there to my next question, and that is, when we do listen to ourselves, we pick up vocal habits that we might want to correct with the help of a speech coach or possibly even a speech therapist. What do you consider some of the most important, maybe most prevalent problems that a person might spot when they're listening to recordings of themselves?
Well, in addition to the pacing is very important. Sometimes people may say, I had no idea that I talk that fast, or I really didn't know that I talk that slow. And so having it recorded can bring that to your attention.
And it's like the camera. You know, the camera doesn't lie and the microphone doesn't lie
right.
at all.
Yes. And even how we interchange words. For example, ask versus ax.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that axe versus ask,
mm-hmm.
and how you pronounce it. It's different.
Pronunciations. And of course, little habits such as, gosh, I didn't realize that in 5 minutes I said 15 times.
Yes.
Vocalized pauses.
Mm-hmm.
But let's mention something about pauses while we're at it.
They're powerful.
My speech professor at Millsaps College in Jackson, Mississippi, made a statement I've never forgotten. He said, when you're giving a speech, leave out everything but the pauses. What do pauses accomplish when we're talking with someone, even in a one-on-one conversation like you and I are having, or in a presentation?
Pauses are powerful. You don't always have to say something. Those filler words, we're big on filler words. Yeah.
You know.
You know. Uh-huh.
You get what I mean?
Right. And those are filler words that we're all guilty of using. And if you were to record yourself, you would hear the filler words that you use when you're speaking on a daily basis. When you think you're going to use a filler word, just pause. Take a deep breath. Don't say anything. Now, the first couple of times when you do it, it'll feel very awkward, very strange. But to the listener, it will come across as very natural. If I'm talking to you and I take a pause, it's very natural to the listeners. It may feel strange to me, but it comes across as very natural. Silence can be golden when you're having a conversation.
Interesting comparison here. My wife taught in the public school system in Oakwood, Georgia, near here, for over 20 years. Naturally, there were times when her class got a little bit unruly. And instead of using what many people would think would be the winning technique, and that is talk louder than them, she just stopped.
Absolutely.
She would just quit.
And the room will slowly get quiet.
The room would get quiet, and they would wonder, gosh, what's happened here? And they would all turn toward Mrs. Lampton to see what...
It's powerful.
Yes.
It really is. Even if you're giving a presentation or a training and you're in a group and everyone's noisy, if you just stand in the front of the room and you're just standing there and not saying a word, they'll look at you and the room will get quiet.
Yes.
It's powerful.
It's like any device that we would use. You can't overdo it.
Right.
You have to use that in moderation, and you have to use that, I would say, and I need your confirmation on this, but I would say you have to do that with what's natural with you. Once you get used to making some pauses, then you can probably determine, you can see whether the audience thinks you're overdoing it.
Yes, in moderation.
Yes. What do you think's the best way to eliminate some of the distracting habits that we find, such as the filler words, the uhs, the mispronunciations, maybe a wrong rate of speech, maybe a monotone voice? What are some of the key ways to overcome these?
Practicing. And there's a technique where if you're flipping through with commercials on television and you are repeating some of the words that you're hearing, it's a wonderful technique because you're actually repeating some of the things, whether it's a character, whether it's a sound, whether it's an animal noise. You're sharpening your voice through different techniques, but you are also being able to pinpoint those filler words because they come out, because you hear them even on television. You'll hear them, especially if you record your voice, you will hear when you add those filler words. And so different techniques, from there are different exercises that you can do. When you're aware of how many times you say, let me back up. There are several levels. There's your unconscious consciousness. There's your conscious consciousness. And those are things where you don't have a clue. You had no idea you were doing these things. And then the next level is, well, you have some idea of what you're doing and you're starting to work on it. You're improving upon it. And so you want to be able to use different techniques. One example is, if you were to imagine having a straw and you're biting down on a straw and you're talking, you can hear how clearly you can talk as if your teeth are touching. Different techniques to use to sharpen your voice.
Okay, fascinating. I'll have some comments after the break. After the break, when we come back, here's something that I'd really like to have you focus attention on, Linda, and give us your counsel about. Let's just say that you have hired a receptionist who will be answering the phone for your company. What would be the top 5 to 7 tips that you would give the receptionist even before she answered the first call? We'll come back to that right after the break.
You're listening to 89.1 WBCX, the voice of Brunel. If you have a suggestion, comment, or request, call the studio at 770-538-4744.
Extraordinary Lives from Brunel University.
6 months ago, I got blindsided by my company. They called me in, laid me off,
and sent me packing with just 2 weeks' severance. Walking out that door, I said, this will never happen to me again. The first thing I did, enroll at Brenau University. The economy may be in shambles, but at Brenau, I'm putting my career together in time for the recovery. Today, I'm earning my degree in business so I can start my own. The first test of my business savvy, choosing a school as reputable and affordable as Brenau. With my Brenau degree, I'm ready for the next chapter in my life, the extraordinary life.
Now with two Atlanta campuses, Norcross and Fairburn, as well as Gainesville and online, register at gobrenau.com. That's GOBRENAU.com. Brenau University, extraordinary lives.
Hi, I'm Gail Dunn, and I'd like to invite you to join me on Garage Gab every Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. On Garage Gab, we'll find a way to help you solve your car dilemmas and save you money. Again, that's 9 a.m. on Wednesday mornings here on The Voice of Brenau.
My name is Jamali Rashears, and this is how I live United. Education has been so important in my life, but lots of kids in my community don't have the same opportunities. I'm an advocate and fundraiser for my local United Way. I help promote academic achievement and give kids a reason to stay in school. We also put together events to raise funds and bring our message to the kids that need to hear it most. My name is Jamali Rashears. I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Senior Issues is a radio show devoted to promoting quality issues to help our seniors maintain or improve their quality of life. Also, the show could help those with seniors and their family be aware of the various issues that would affect both them and their loved ones. Showtime is 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. every Thursday, and yes, we are live. We will cover a wide range of subjects over the course of time. If you have a subject that you would like discussed, or if you know of an event that our listening audience should be aware of, call me at 770-380-9727. This is Charles White, Certified Senior Advisor. I hope that we can add you to our listening audience.
I don't know about you, but I just love books, and there's thousands of good, used, gently handled, and loved books available at the Next Chapter Bookstore in the Main Street Market Building on the square in downtown Gainesville. Next Chapter Bookstore is operated by Our Neighbor and offers housing and opportunities for men and women with disabilities. If you need more space for some more loved books, you can donate as well. Bring them by, and they'll be glad to help you. Look for more books and good books at the Next Chapter Bookstore in the Main Street Market, on the square in downtown Gainesville.
Hi, I am Ricardo Boyer, host of Embracing Health. Every Friday at noon, we talk about various topics related to your health and well-being, empowering you to make positive changes in your life. So, join me Fridays at noon here on 89.1 WBCX, the voice of Brenau.
Hello, you're in the second half now of the Communication Corner. I'm your host, Dr. Bill Lampton, welcoming you as we focus on learning about the human voice today from a true expert, Linda Hensel. And Linda, just before the break, I mentioned a question that we'd get back to. Before I do that, though, I want to mention that I truly underscore your recommendation that to improve our voice and diction, we have a magnificent array of excellent models when we just turn on our television and listen to some of the best broadcasters. Earlier in our conversation today, we mentioned some of our favorites. One that I did not mention is John Roberts, who also was on American Morning, now has switched to Fox as of just yesterday, I remember reading. There was a time when I wrote an article, Lessons from the Best Broadcasters, and I got tremendous feedback on that. People talked about their favorite broadcasters and how they did learn from them. So, yes, I underscore that point. Now back to the question I mentioned just before the break. You, Linda, have just hired a receptionist for your company. You know that she is going to make that first impression that we talked about when we started out. What would be five or six or seven things that you would say to this new receptionist before he or she ever made the first call?
Well, the first thing I would do is present them with a gift of a mirror. to place next to their desk so that they can see how they look before they even answer the telephone. A smile comes through the phone, and it's powerful. And it helps to set the stage for your customers or your clients. They can hear that smile. And so I would give her a gift of a mirror.
You'll be interested in knowing that there's a transportation company here that I did some training for. And before I ever did any training for them, the manager of the company told me, Bill, practically everything we do is by telephone. It's done all over the nation. And I have every person sitting there with a mirror before them.
Yes.
Some companies have discovered the
Absolutely.
Value of this.
Mm-hmm. And it's a powerful technique. It's very small technique, but it's powerful. And then I would make sure that she was aware of her energy level. Your energy level comes through over the telephone. And we all know what our high energy levels are, whether we're a morning person or whether we're an afternoon person, and how your energy can dwindle as you go through the day. So those times when you know that you have low energy levels, that's when you need to be particularly aware of yourself when you're talking to your customers over the phone.
Rev it up just a little
rev
bit.
Rev it up. I would also make sure that she knows the importance of identifying herself by giving her name, the name of the agency, and a greeting. Good morning, good afternoon. It's very important to be able to greet them through what I call the four-step process of the greeting, stating your name, the name of the agency, and, of course, how may I help you.
Mm-hmm. One thing I would add to that is to cut out any distracting background noises.
Yes.
It bothers me so much when I call a company. The person answers the phone, and maybe they've done these first two or three things that you recommend. But all of a sudden, you hear some blaring music in the background. Or even worse to me is if the person is talking to me, and they will interrupt the conversation to turn and say, "Yeah, Susie, I'll meet you for lunch today."
It comes across as so unprofessional. It
yeah.
really does. And it's all about the image that you are trying to set for your agency or for your company. And speaking along the lines of with the receptionist, your voicemail.
Voicemail is
powerful because so many companies, when they're starting, they neglect the power of the voicemail. You want to make sure that that phone greeting is personalized, that it's customized to be specific to your agency, and those automated messages are a no-no.
I do not care for those automated messages.
Yeah. They're so impersonal.
They are very impersonal. And here, too, is where the energy that you and I have been talking about needs to come through. For example, if my voice message says, "Hi, this is Bill. I really appreciate you calling. And how about ringing me back sometime? Or you just leave me a message and I'll call you back." How exciting does that sound?
Not exciting at all. And I may or may not decide to give you a call back.
You probably wouldn't, especially being the voice expert that you are. Anything else that you would say to that receptionist as a guideline or a tip?
I would just make sure that she understands the significance of her job. Sometimes we devalue the person that answers the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And that person is key to your organization because they set the first impression.
Yes, they do.
Before the customers even walk through the door, there's going to be phone contact. You'll speak with someone by phone first before you even walk through the door. So that person is a critical component of a successful organization. And I would make sure that they understand the value that they present for the organization.
One thing that many people don't realize is the impression that they are making that way. For example, I think of a man many years ago that I was doing business with. He was in a distant city. And when I called him to set up an appointment with him, I thought it was going to be one of the dullest meetings that I would ever have because he was so bland. He was so almost lifeless over the phone. By contrast, when I got with him, he was warm, personable, upbeat. We established a good working relationship and even a friendship. But he, I would imagine, possibly lost some business because of that sort of bland impression that he gave.
Yes. It could have been a disconnect. And you've heard the term, don't judge a book by its cover. In that instance, it was just a disconnect.
So, you know, you have many talents that a lot of people would like to have. One that I always aspired to, but God decided to give it to you instead, is singing talent. The only time my children would ever let me sing would be if the lawnmower was on loud. And I really learned my lesson when I was a couple of thousand miles from home and having a good time, did karaoke. Unfortunately, somebody sent me the tape. And I realized then that Broadway did not have a place for me. Why is it that, I guess I'll ask it this way. Why would the singing voice and the speaking voice be quite different in their quality and in their talent level?
You know, and that is an excellent question, and I wish I had the true answer to that question. But I've heard people that have beautiful, melodic, sounding voices when they're singing, and then they speak like a mouse. I have no idea what is behind that, but I know just carrying the notes and the tunes of when you're singing, it's just different when you are speaking, because again, it's at your natural voice level that you're speaking. When you're singing, you're altering those levels. You're singing high, you're singing low, and it can come across completely different through a song versus when you're coming back down to your natural voice tone.
Something else I've noticed, and I'm sure you have too, when you hear musical performers in concert, one of the keys as to whether you're going to leave there feeling really good about that person is not just their songs, but it's the banter and with the audience and
yes,
between the songs.
Showmanship. Mm-hmm. Showmanship is powerful because your audience wants to be engaged. Even when you're doing a presentation or a training session, that interaction that you have with your group is so important. But your voice can be likened to a fine-tuned instrument. It can improve, you can sharpen it, but you have to practice. And it takes courage because when we talk about our voices, it takes courage because if you know there are some areas where you can develop and sharpen, sometimes it's painful if you hear that tape recorder and you say, I don't really sound like that, do I?
But you do.
But you do.
Not just practice, but usually guided practice.
Right.
We've talked about speech coaches and in some cases speech therapists. I have a daughter who's a speech therapist. I know the value of that profession. So it's for example, I could go out and practice golf 6 hours if my body would let me do it. But if I'm just repeating my bad habits, I need a professional instructor. And I've got a wonderful one here that I rely on. Every few weeks, I go back to him because I can't see my performance. He can see my performance. Okay, the singing voice versus the speaking voice, we've just covered that. Something else I'm curious about, and that is, why would a person who has a stuttering habit when they speak not have that when they sing? And, of course, the classic best-known illustration of that would be country singing star Mel Tillis.
Yes. Again, when you're speaking, you're at your natural voice tone, and you're at a slower level, a slower pace. When you're singing, you are minimizing the gaps between your words. You're combining the words, if that's making sense. You're combining the words, so you're singing the words together, which has a tendency to just come out more naturally through song than the focused efforts through speaking.
Let's talk a little bit about the mechanics of speaking. But before we do that, let me remind our listeners that we're at the three-quarter hour of the Communication Corner, speaking with our magnificent guest today, blessed with a tremendous voice, Linda Hensel, voiceover artist, singer, and trainer. Very, very versatile, as I said at the outset. You're in the Communication Corner, WBCX 89.1 FM, the voice of Brenau. I'm your host, Dr. Bill Lampton. Okay, a little bit about the mechanics of speaking. I still remember, again, my speech professor in college saying that we need to start our speaking from deep within us, from the diaphragm, the chest. Why is that important? What does that accomplish?
It has to do with breathing and from your diaphragm versus when you're singing. We talk a lot about that even in singing, that you sing from your diaphragm so that it's low and it helps with breathing so that you're able to project and it comes across more clear than that nasal through the nose type of voice. The same is with speaking. You can be very nasally, but you can have a more rich, full sounding voice when it comes from your diaphragm. And posture has a lot to do with that mm-hmm. as well. You want to make sure that you are sitting upright. And if I'm doing voiceovers, I like to stand so that I'm breathing freely and unrestricted.
Then there are also people who advise if you're going to be making a business phone call, stand when you do it, because
yes.
you will automatically be more alert, more energized than if you were sitting down.
Absolutely. Going back to those energy levels, gauging your body and being able to, the breathing techniques, making sure that you're breathing properly.
This is why when a person experiences extreme stage fright, and their voice, their throat sort of constricts, and they're speaking from way up in their frame, this just accentuates the problem, doesn't it?
It does. And, you know, public speaking is considered the number one fear that people have, even before the fear of death. And so that is just amazing how many people are terrified at the thought of speaking in front of a crowd. So, of course, that nervousness will affect your voice. You'll begin to hear the crackling sound in your voice. And no one will know that you're nervous until you show it. And that's what I always say, that just keep going. No one will know that you're nervous. But when you begin to show it, the sweaty palms, the rocking back and forth, but the crackling of your voice is a giveaway.
Truthfully, this is where videotape can be quite assuring to a speaker, especially a speaker who's just beginning to develop his or her skills. When I'm doing speech coaching, I videotape someone, we play it back. They're sitting there scratching their heads, and they say, gee, I kind of look like I was in control. I thought I was shaking and people would know it. I thought I was lost. It looked like I was in control. So videotape, rather than demoralizing us, to me, it can reinforce that, hey,
I'm not so bad.
That's right. I'm not so bad after all. Talk about genetics for a minute. I've had some instances where I would meet someone and I knew their father ahead of time. And if the son had only spoken and not told me he was that person's son, I think I would have known that. The same can be the case with a mother-daughter. How significant is genetics in the voice that we have?
Oh, genetics is powerful. It's the key. It plays a large role. And you'll see with parents, children sounding like their parents, genetics plays a big factor with your voice.
We talked earlier about regional accents. It's been my observation, and I'd like to know whether you confirm this, that regional accents are not nearly as prominent as they once were. I grew up in South Mississippi, and even when I go back to Mississippi, yes, I will hear much of the dialogue that I grew up with, but I find a lot of other types of dialogue there as well. Here are a couple of reasons I would think that might be the case. One is the migration of the population. Look
yes.
at the Atlanta
Look
area,
at Atlanta.
For example.
Yes.
Atlanta area, I haven't seen any statistics on it, but certainly it's not the 85% of Southern-born people
right.
that it once was, or even American-born people mm-hmm. that it once was. So the mobility of the geography has, mobility of the population has something to do with it. I think, too, that the generation today grew up watching a lot of television. Television, for the most part, is non-dialect, mm-hmm. it's non-accented. How do you respond to these observations?
Yes, and with the television, again, going back to being able to practice what you're seeing on television, that's connected with your voice as well. And we'll use the Atlanta, for example. There are so many people from different regions that have moved to Atlanta. So now you're going to hear all types. You're hearing all types of languages, dialects now.
Now, you grew up in Georgia, right?
I'm from Ohio.
Oh, you're from Ohio.
I'm from Ohio originally, but I've been here 18 years.
Mm-hmm.
Still catch myself every now and then. I'll slip a y'all in there every now and then.
Well, what is fascinating is if you stay away from your native locale for a while, but you go back there within 2 days, within 3 days, you'll be picking up some of the,
yes,
not only some of the idioms, but some of the accents as well.
It's true.
It's definitely going to happen. Linda, you and I both occasionally, and I'm sure it's only occasionally, we have somebody say to us when we're having a conversation with them, Linda or Bill, I just don't like the tone that you're using. Talk to us a little bit, please, about how important the tone of voice is when we're talking to somebody. And is the tone sort of a subconscious reflection of what we're really feeling when we're talking?
It's true. Tone plays a large part in the meaning of your message. You've heard people say it's not so much what they said, but it was the way they said it. It was just the tone of their voice.
Yes, I'm married. I've heard that before.
You can identify.
That's right.
And so tone gets to the point of what you really mean and how you really feel. Even with your body language, the nonverbals always speak the truth. No matter what comes out of your mouth, the nonverbals speak the truth.
If I'm looking at you and I'm yawning.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I can tell that what's really going on, how you're really feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But in the case of your voice, tone is what is really speaking the truth.
If a supervisor says to an employee during a performance review, I'm really pleased with your work, that can, depending upon the tone.
Absolutely. You can say the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
In many different tones.
Linda, I am pleased with your work is very different from Linda, I'm pleased with your work.
Completely different.
Mm-hmm.
Totally different meaning.
Yes, the tone.
Based on the tone.
The tone has a lot in meaning. Well, let's talk for a couple of minutes about something that you have moved into professionally that most of us know very little about, and that is the voiceover field. When we tune into a television program, whether it's Dancing with the Stars or whatever, there is usually, in fact, practically always, there's an announcer that we don't see who's introducing the program. Years ago, one of the alums of the college that I attended, Millsaps College, I renewed acquaintance with him when he became a broadcaster with WNBC, the flagship radio station in New York City. Once I had the opportunity to visit him, and he asked me to come into the studio with him. When I was in the studio with him, he said, we can talk for a couple of minutes, but when the clock gets to 2 minutes till, I've got to do a voiceover. So I sat there by him and watched him introduce a soap opera that was coming up. What is intriguing to me about that is that there's so many voices that we hear that are never identified. Yes. We don't see the person, yet they play a very important role in entertainment and news. Certainly news programs,
yes,
have their intros like that. Give us a little insight, please, into the voiceover business.
The voiceover business is a very difficult industry to get into. You have clients that, once they have a voiceover talent that they like, they don't let them go. They stick with that talent. So, but once you're in, you're in. And it's a wonderful industry to get into. And so many times people will say, oh, well, you know, do you do radio? Do you do television? You've got a unique sounding voice. And when people are told that I think they should capitalize on that. And it's a gift. And I think it's important to be able to utilize that gift. And if there's an opportunity to get into it, you definitely should try. The benefits, it's flexibility. You're able to create your own schedule, which is wonderful. And you're able to, there are so many things out there that require voiceovers, that things that we don't even think about. I mean, think of your GPS systems. That's not always automated. There are real people that can do the GPS systems. You'll even probably know that there are some celebrities that they hire to do the GPS mm-hmm. systems. If you want a particular celebrity to be the voice of your GPS system.
I'm just always glad that the GPS lady can't hear what I'm saying when she wants to recalculate.
Right. But the industry is endless, and there's enough opportunity for everyone that wants to get into the industry. And your voice can be sharpened, it can be fine-tuned, if that's something that you really want to do.
Something else that we surely should emphasize as we're getting to our closing couple of minutes is getting back to how much the voice is you. And I've often said that your voice is you, because that's what introduces you to someone else. That's what impresses someone else about you. That's your image maker. And so we need to give very careful attention to our voices. It is a gift. All of us have a different type of voice, a mm-hmm. different gift. But it is something that we should develop. And what type of training do you recommend for people? Let's just sum that up. You've talked about listening to yourself, getting a coach or a trainer. Mm-hmm. What would be anything else that you'd like to say to sort of sum up the way that we can improve?
There are teleclasses that are available now, voiceover teleclasses.
And you mean on the computer or what?
It's Internet? Through the voice. When I first got into voiceovers, my voice coach, Susan Berkeley, she's the voice of AT&T.
Oh.
And we first met each other through a teleclass where she was in Newark, New Jersey, and I was in Atlanta. All she needed was my voice. So you can really look into different teleclasses, because it doesn't matter. You can be in a different state. All you need is your voice, and you can go through a series of classes that will identify the type of voice that you have, whether it's doing characters, whether it's doing industrials, the perfume counter, you know, thank you for using this type of cologne or this type of perfume. You can identify the different type of voice that you have that you're best suited for in the industry of voiceovers. But teleclasses are a wonderful option.
Thank you. Well, Linda, we've, surprisingly enough, come near the close of our fascinating hour with you. And definitely you have demonstrated to us that you are a renowned expert in voice. We thank you so much for driving over in the early morning hours from Atlanta and contributing so much to WBCX FM listeners in the Communication Corner.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Delighted. And listeners, note this, please. Later today, you'll want to visit my blog, where you will have access to a write-up about Linda, including her contact information and her photo with me. The blog address, thecompletecommunicator.com. Again, thecompletecommunicator.com. I'm sure that you'll want to follow up with her, because she brings a powerful level of talent to the Communication Corner. Also, my blog provides a complete audio of this broadcast, so you can hear it again, and you can direct your friends and professional colleagues to the blog so they can hear Linda Hensel's terrific advice. Here's that link again, thecompletecommunicator.com. Also, while you're on my blog, take a few minutes to scroll back through previous postings in the blog. You'll find a photo, feature write-up, and audio of each broadcast that I have hosted since last June. And those of you who listen to us regularly know that we have an unbroken string of highly informative and entertaining guests. Please know that I enjoy hearing from you. I'll welcome your comments on my blog and your phone calls, too. You can reach me at 678-316-4300, and the WBCX station number is 770-538-4744. I'm Dr. Bill Lampton.